Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugrupul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombameri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, let's hope you've all had a great weekend. I certainly had a relatively good weekend. Looking forward to a big week. Well, looking forward to, I don't know if I'm looking forward to it or not, but anyway, there's a big week ahead for us here. Bit of an out-of-control party out there at Acacia Ridge on the weekend, eh? Bit of damage done to people and property, policemen's in hospital and stuff. And I see on today's Courier Mail, the Lord Mayor of Brisbane, Graham Quirk, is saying he would like to try to force that young fella, that young Murray kid, Jordan Fuller, try and force Fuller, who was the host of the Acacia Ridge party, to pay for cleaning up costs. Well, Mr. Quirk, come on, be fair dinkum about this. Have you tried that with other parties gone out of control, these other riots on the white side of town? Have you tried it there? If you haven't, I suggest you do so first before you start selecting blacks doing it. But anyway, maybe I'm jumping the gun. It doesn't sit right with me, that's all. I haven't heard it suggested for those numerous parties that have gone out of control because they've been promoted on Facebook or whatever it is they do. And there's been riots and damage done to property. Numerous occasions this has happened on the white side of town. And I haven't heard Quirk come out and say it's time that those hosts of those parties paid for the costs. But when it's on the black side of town, it appears it could be a different story. I would have thought more of Quirk. Would have thought he'd be a bit better than that. But anyway, there could be. This is all allegedly happening in the paper here. Like, yeah, somebody could have their wires crossed because I thought Quirk was bigger than that. But it doesn't sit right. It doesn't look good on first impressions anyway. But certainly introduce the laws. I don't condone this sort of violence and out-of-control behaviour. I don't condone it for 1 minute. But let's be consistent with this sort of, with the way that costs are pursued here. Let's be consistent. Put the law down for everybody, all concerned. And it should have been done a long time ago, not now, because on this occasion. Got a caller on the line. Let's just see who we've got. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who we got?
Yeah, Roachie here, mate.
What do you reckon, Roachie?
Mate, I don't think they should have damaged the bus like they did. I used to work on the buses. And
shouldn't have damaged any property.
I know what damage they can do.
That's right. Shouldn't have damaged any property.
Do you think he might be talking about that?
I'm not sure, but whether it's that or costs, property costs across the board, I think there's been private property damaged in the past. There have been numerous riots and police calls to these sorts of parties in the past, numerous times, on the white side of town.
What I can't understand, Tiger, is why they advertise it on Facebook. Do you think it's publicity they want or something like that to make them out big men or big women that they are? They just laugh at it after that, but they don't think of what happens to the police or things like that are trying to stop it.
I just think they're thinking about stuff. I've seen Facebook entries, some of my own family making Facebook entries, and they're telling them almost when they've gone to the toilet last and what they're doing, you know, what they're having for breakfast.
My grandkids' mother does these things on Facebook, and I don't think Facebook was meant for that. Not at all. Computer, but they got to think of the general public and other things. There's no good going mad and riots. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I've worked inside jails and I know what it's like. Once you're in a cell, mate, you don't get out.
That's it, mate. That's right. But no, look, I've seen people that just write simply, "Good night, I'm off to bed." And I just think it's so bloody ridiculous that people might take the time out of their day and to make that comment later on when they're going to bed. And so I just think it's outrageous, mate, you know.
I was never going to come down and see you at the Murray School on Friday, but I didn't know whether I was allowed in to have a talk to you or not. I drove past as you were driving out.
All right, yeah.
And I didn't know whether I'd be allowed to go in and have a chat to you or not.
Oh, mate, you come in anyway. If I'm around and you're close by, call in and say good day. Don't go worrying.
That's good to know.
Okay, don't go worrying about whether you're allowed to or not. If I'm around, just call in and say good day.
Righto, then.
Righto, buddy. You have a good day.
I'll leave you to it, then.
Righto, mate. Have
Thanks,
a good one.
Tiger.
See you now. Bye.
Bye.
That's one of our regulars, Roachie, there. We've got another caller on the line. Hello, who have we got?
Yeah, mate, it's Chris, the drummer.
Chris, the drummer. What would you like to say, Chris? What are your thoughts?
Mate, just ringing up about the Facebook thing. Look, my daughter, she's like 17, and she's got 408 contacts on Facebook.
Yep.
Now, I don't think that all these people do it on purpose. They might say, oh, yeah, I'm having a party on Saturday, blah, 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 on Facebook, which is stupid. And then someone in her contact list that she's probably met once or twice turns around and says, oh, there's a party over at Vanessa's place. Let's go and have a party there and crash it.
Yep.
And next thing you know, it goes viral. I don't think it's meant to.
I think you're right in some cases, you know. I think you're right. Somebody else picks up on it and puts it up there. And sometimes with malicious intent too, Chris. Sometimes with malicious intent, you know. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
I mean, you know, if you had 408 contacts and most of them, I would say, you've either spoken to, known from school or something like that, you're bound to upset somebody that wants to make something bad for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, let's fix her up. Post it up there, and next thing you know, there's 400, 500 people rocking up to your party.
Be a bit scary, wouldn't it, mate, Dave, if you're putting on a party for your daughter? You're putting on the 18th for your daughter or something, and next thing you find this sort of stuff happening. By gee, that'd be scary stuff, mate.
Mate, it would scare the living daylights out of me. And on top of it, you know, like you say about paying for the damage, I agree with paying for the damage, but not just one party. I think everybody, if you cause the problem, if you let the party get out of hand, and, you know, like if you've got a situation where you could have 100 people rocking up to a party, I mean, I've told my daughter no more than 40 people at a party ever.
Yeah, play it safe.
My boys too, 40 people, that's it. If you want to have more than that, you go and hire a venue.
Play it safe.
Make everybody pay $5 a head or something.
Yeah. No, mate, I've got no problem with paying for damage, but introduce a law now. And make it blanket. Don't go focusing on this last party or the one before before.
It's like shutting the gate after the friggin' horses bolted, mate. You got to say, right, okay, because of this party and what happened to the public transport system.
Yes.
What you've got to do now is put a law out there that says if it happens again.
That's right. Yep.
It's your fault. You've been warned. There are laws against it.
From here on in.
Oh well. Let's make a law and enforce it on this guy now.
You're right there, mate. Yep. All right, Chris. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, mate.
Good suggestion.
Cheers.
Have a good day, mate. Bye. And we've got another call on the line. Hello, who have we got?
G'day, Tiger. Steve Craven, mate. How are you?
Good, Steve. What would you like to say, mate?
Mate, just on that issue about the damage that was done, I only saw this morning quickly on the news about the bus that was damaged, but I think they've identified the people that have done that. Why don't they just chase them for the money?
Yeah. That's right.
You know,
yep.
I mean, look, you know, you can't pin the person that's having the party.
No.
You know, everyone's got their own mind, mate. If they're going to damage something, you've got to chase them that does it.
Yep. No, I can understand the mayor's concern and even anger and frustration. I share the same concerns. I don't condone for 1 minute this sort of thing. But introduce a law now where you're going to pursue either the people that are holding the party or the people that are charged, whatever it is. If there's not a law already, and I think there is, when people are charged, I think that they've got the laws in place to pursue compensation or costs. They have. There's no question about that.
The world's just gone crazy. You know, these kids don't get held responsible for their actions anymore. You've got to, if you cause damage, you do something wrong in society, you've got to be punished for it.
That's it. Take responsibility for it.
That's right. Responsibility. Right.
That's it, mate. Righto, Steve. Thanks for your call, buddy. You have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Righto, mate.
You too.
And we better move on to my guest sitting over here in Melbourne waiting for me. James Williams is my guest today. James is the ICT Project Manager with Catholic Education Commission, and he's managing a program called Technology Enriched Curriculum Project. James, welcome to the program. How are you, mate?
Oh, good, thanks, Tiger. Good to talk to you this morning.
It's good to have you on the program, mate. How are you? Well, good. How's Melbourne? Yeah, what's the weather like down there?
You know what this place is like. Last week it was just, I think, about 8 days of hot, really, really hot weather. Today it's raining and cold.
All right. Well, you know, don't want to get you too comfortable in one or the other. Move around a bit. Keep you on your toes.
I'm thinking about heading back to Queensland sometime not too distant future.
Now, tell us your mob, your country. You are a Murray fella. Tell me your mob, yeah, your country.
Definitely a Murray fella, Wakka Wakka mainly. That's where my mob's from. Up there around about Banban Springs, Theodore, that area.
Yeah, deadly country.
Lovely country. Yeah. Lovely country. And to be honest with you, I seriously am starting to feel like I miss it now. I don't want to stay here too much longer.
You've been away for a few years. How long have you been away?
Yeah, well, I was in Sydney for about 8 years, and then I've been down here for 5 years.
Right, yeah.
So, and that was the purpose of the exercise, just to get out of up there for a little while and see the rest of Australia a little bit. But seriously, I've told my wife and my kids we're planning a date in the not too distant future to head back to Queensland.
Oh, good.
Yeah, back to Murray Country, Murrayland.
Now, you're talking about family. Yeah, you left here and you was there were no kids. So you got a couple of kids now?
Yeah, oh, that's the funny thing. Hey, I've got two kids. One's 13, a boy, 13, girl is 8.
Right,
and yeah. I've actually had another baby now. He's only 2 months old.
All right.
At my age.
Oh, good on you, mate. Good on you. We need to make sure that our mob don't die out. We keep the blood flowing, the mob race.
We welcome him. He's a beautiful little boy. Yeah.
Good one. All right. Now, where'd you grow up? You mentioned Banban Springs. I called into Banban about 2 months ago. I called in there on my way home to Theodore. And it's the water. There's water there again. It's improved a lot because it was dead. The site was dead. There wasn't any water.
Yeah, that's right. I heard that myself as well. See, I don't know that much about what's happening up there at the moment, but I did hear about a year or two ago. Yeah, it wasn't too great.
Wasn't too healthy at all, but now, mate, it's in good health by the look of things. Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah, my mum, I'm sure a lot of people know my mum, Maureen Williams, Maureen Stanley. She grew up in Theodore. And, that's where she was from before, when she was very young, and before she got married to Dad. And they moved out to Longreach, further out west. And that's where I was born. And
so you're Longreach born?
I was born in Longreach, yeah.
All right.
All my uncles, Uncle Stan and Fred and Uncle Kevin, Uncle Grub Stanley, they all worked out at stations out in Winton, Droven and Penton, and Dad did a fair bit of that as well.
All old horsemen, eh? Horsemen, cattlemen.
That's what they did. A lot of the old fellas did that. And some of my dad did out there in the bush, and they had a pretty tough life. But then eventually they moved to Rockhampton, and that's where I went to school, and that's where all my extended mob now is, around the Rocky area too.
All right.
Yeah.
And did you go into university or you did a trade straight up? Because you're a jeweller by trade, are you not?
Well, what happened was when I finished high school, I wanted to do a trade because that's, what my mum and dad wanted me to do that, and I wanted to do it as well. I was very mechanically minded, and I was looking around. I actually wanted to become a mechanic, but I just met this fellow one day. He was actually a watchmaker. And he said, I'm looking for an apprentice. Would you be interested in doing that? And I'd always pull my mum's watches and clocks apart and stuff like that. Couldn't get them back together.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you ever get them back together?
No, not really. Not then, because I didn't know what I was doing. But the funny thing was that opportunity came along. So, I was happy to do that. So I became a watchmaker. And, that served me well. I ran my own business in Brisbane for a few years, doing a lot of work for Proud's Jewellers and Amy's Jewellers and Angus and Coote. A lot of big name jewellers where I ran my own business, doing all their jewellery, all their watch repairs actually.
All right.
I worked at Proud's Jewellers in Queen Street in Brisbane.
Mm.
And that served me well, that trade. And I did that until I was nearly 30 years old, and the opportunity came along to go and play music. So I'd played music my whole life. I started playing guitar when I was 12. I was playing in bands around Rockhampton and working with my cousin Yvonne Stanley around Rocky, doing lots of gigs and stuff. So I actually became a pro muser then when I was about 28, and toured the east coast of Australia as lead singer in a rock band with long hair. it was a great time. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right.
And then what actually happened after that, then I thought, I've got to get a bit serious here. So I went and I was into computers at the time, so I went off and just a certificate at that time, certificate in IT. Couldn't go to university or get too high qualifications. Eventually got a diploma in IT, and I'm actually doing a degree now.
All right, good
degree
one.
In information systems. Yeah, so that's going to take a few years. But I've always wanted to get a degree, so it's hard work. But Yeah, so I'm really focused on the IT stuff now. So
good on you. So you put the watchmaker to the jeweler tools up, have you?
Not exactly.
No? Still dabble in it?
You could go to murraytime.com.
You've got the Murray face watch still going, have you?
Yeah.
The Murray face, yeah, the colour, the red, black and gold.
Good on you,
the flag.
The flag.
Good on
you. Yeah, so, you know, you're interested in, should put in a plug. You can still buy a watch from murraytime.com.
Murraytime, M-U-R-R-I?
Yeah, it's a bit of a play on words, T-I-M-E? You know what it means.
Yeah, Murraytime.
M-U-R-R-I-T-I-M-E.com.
.com, good on
you. And it's .com because I've got some plans to try and do some future watches in the projects in the future to maybe interest the world market. It's just a bit of a hobby now, you know, just do a little bit here and there.
Okay. Oh, so, good on you. Yeah, because I was going to say you were making the watches with the Murray colours on the face, the flag face.
Yeah.
And murraytime.com. Would that be a black dot? No, let's not go there. Let's not go there. Murraytime.com, people. You can go along there and you'll find James Williams's watch that have got the Murray flag on the face. And I'm sure a lot of you older mob have seen them around. I was wearing one myself until I put my hand and I think I dived in the water somewhere with it.
Well, I think there's been a few that were made over in Hong Kong, you know, some enterprising, you know, black fellow got them made in Hong Kong, but I actually import the components here and I make them myself, and I'm the only First Nations watchmaker that exists in the world. So I think that's something important that should be noted. So that's why
fantastic.
I continue to keep it going.
Oh, of course. You'd have to. Good on you, man. It's good that you've raised it and letting people know. Go and get a Murray Time watch from murraytime.com.
I'm going to tell you about another website later on, but that's a bit of a surprise.
All right. I've got a caller on the line. Let's just see who we've got. Stay with us.
Sure.
Hello. Got the radio turned up. What's going on? Can't hear a thing.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, well, right, I can hear you. Who we got?
Neville Milgate.
What would you like? They've got your radio turned up a little bit loud in the background there, brother. If you can turn it down, it'd be good.
Yeah, we've got it down now.
Good on you. All right, what's your name, sorry?
Neville Milgate.
Neville, right, and Neville, what would you like to say?
I was trying to ring up the station.
All right, well, this is a wrong. The station number is 38920100. Drop the double H on the end and go replace the two H with two zeros and you'll have it.
Yeah.
Righto, mate.
All right, then.
Thanks for your call. Bye. Welcome to the program. Who have we got?
Tiger Al Smith.
Yes, Al, what would you like to say?
First, I'd like to say a big hello to my good old friend Jim Williams. Jimmy, been trying to find you for years now. I know where you are at murraytime.com.
You got him.
Tiger, last Friday's show was such an inspiration, man. You know, it inspired you, as you said. It inspired me, magic. That show, the ACPAR shows, brilliant. And, you know, they're the ones which really get us going.
Good on you,
my
mate.
Fella, me.
Thanks for your call, then. Yes, now it's good to have the young ones on. Righto, mate. Thanks a lot. You have a good one, then. All right. James.
Yes,
there's a man that was trying to catch up with you, eh? You
know, that's right. Everyone at Naomi is Jim or Jimmy.
That's it. Jim or Jimmy. Yes. Well, your job there now with... let me see, it's Catholic Education Commission, the Victorian Catholic Education Commission. You're the ICT project manager.
That's right, yeah.
Tell us about this project, the TECP, Technology Enriched Curriculum Project.
Well, the idea really came out of the Department of Education, Employment and Workplace Relations. And it was funded through DEWA as part of the, you know, everyone to know about the closing the gap, you know, attempt at, you know, making things a bit better. But this is all about the expansion of intensive literacy and numeracy programs for Indigenous students. And they were actually looking for somebody to run the project. So the Catholic Education Commission of Victoria, and I actually work for the Catholic Education Office here in Victoria, they put their hand up to run the project. So I was employed as an IT project manager to work in the Catholic Education Office, and then we proceeded to get other people to help deliver the training in all different sorts of forms. So we actually had an external training organisation come in and help us run some sessions to get the students motivated.
Now, this is a project that had been running for a while before you actually started?
Well, probably about, I think it was about a year before I actually started, they'd been trying to get things underway. They'd had the money, you know, assigned for the project, and they'd been working on trying to get it off the ground without much success, but it was really only until the Catholic Education Commission put up their hand to run it, and then they employed me, and that's when I really started to get things going, at the end of 2011. So we started to get things going then, and it was the whole thing was run through 2012.
Now, the schools, how many schools, and is it just Catholic schools, or is it broader than that?
No, well, it was actually 15 schools in total, and the idea, it wasn't just wanted to focus on Catholic schools. It's cross-sectoral. So we have kids from, you know, from government schools, DWCD schools, which is a government school down here. Then also the Catholic schools plus independent schools as well, which included Warro Aboriginal College down at Healesville. So it's approximately five schools from three different regions. And one of the regions, as I just said, was Healesville. And then another region was Echuca, which is about 2 hours' drive north of Brisbane, where there's a really big First Nations population of people, you know, around there, Yorta Yorta, I think people would know Yorta Yorta, Wamba Wamba, around Echuca and Shepparton and that sort of area. There's a big mob of Koori people up there, and a lot of students. So that was a good region to run it in. And then also Ballarat, which was an interesting sort of area to run the project, because as far as the Aboriginal people out in that area concerned, they were pretty much wiped out by the gold rush. So it was interesting to have all the students that were there, because they were from different areas, you know, further down, sort of surrounding areas, actually working, and their parents, you know, work and live in Ballarat now. So that was it was an interesting perspective.
And is it only First Nations schools? First Nations kids, children, students.
Yeah, that was the idea. Middle years, First Nations students. And the idea was just to, you know, try and find a unique sort of a different angle at improving their numeracy and literacy skills. You know, I think it's a well-known thing that they tend to fall behind a little bit. So this is where it came from. It was about boosting their literacy and numeracy skills. And I think a clever way that, even before I came along, the Catholic Education Office decided that they needed to come up with an IT, you know, perspective to run the project. So they decided to use iPads, which was pretty clever, because it was sort of like, you know, tend to reel the kids in, because you'd give them all an iPad and they could have a bit of a play around for a little while. And while they're playing around, you can sort of start moving them into doing a little bit of work. And well, to be honest with you, all these, you know, little Koori kids were having a good time, and they didn't really consider it to be work. But we ended up with some pretty good results with them writing some very good digital stories. It was all about writing digital stories on the iPad.
Now, this is under Closing the Gap, within the Closing the Gap framework?
Yeah. It's
funded by who?
By DWA.
Right. Now, these digital stories, man, like, there isn't a kid around that probably wouldn't give their right arm for an iPad, so it's a really quite a smart way to get to engage them. And then you talk about writing digital stories. What are they doing? Are they talking to their old people or writing down? What sort of stories are they doing?
Well, I'll go back to the organisation that we got to help us run the program. The principal of that organisation, his name is David, and he's got a lot of experience working with Aboriginal communities. He's actually a native title lawyer and a filmmaker. So he works a lot with remote communities in the Northern Territory, teaching them how to write digital stories and how to make movies. And he's been involved in a lot of films that have been made. And so he's actually got a lot of experience in really getting these young ones to talk about their family, you know, their history, their background. So what we'd do is, it was once a month, we'd have what we call spark sessions, and it might be one day or 2 days, where it come up with a theme to actually encourage the students to sit down and write stories. And, you know, invariably they'd all start off talking about their sporting heroes. And, I mean, I think that's great, but that wasn't what we were trying to focus on. So we'd try and steer them away from there and then give them a theme or give them an idea where they'd start to talk about their you know, their mum or their dad or their family or their history about who their mob was, you know, and if they, that some of them knew a lot because obviously they had the opportunity to learn. Some didn't know much about who their mob was and where their country was and much about their history or their elders and that sort of thing. So it was really important to get them started on that journey. We might, if it was a two-day spark session, we might give them the theme, you know, one day, and then we'd work as much as we could, and then we'd encourage them to go home and you know, ring up Nan and Pop or you know, another relative who might be able to tell them a bit of story. And we found out, we got feedback through families that they were wrapped because these young ones were coming home and they'd never wanted to talk about it before, but then all of a sudden they wanted to talk to the elders in the community about, you know, tell us the history about our community that we live in. Tell us about what you did for education, because I know that before I'm thinking about, you know, Auntie Melva Johnson in Echuca, there was no education for blackfellas in Echuca. When she was young, she only went to, she finished school when she was 13. And what she's done in the Echuca area is she's done a great deal of work and making sure all the local First Nations kids are getting into high school, you know, finishing grade 10, grade 12. So a lot of the kids wrote stories about Auntie Melba, the kids from the Echuca area. We've actually even got a song that was written by a year five student about Auntie Melba. So they were really inspired by what the elders had to say, but also I think the elders and the community itself were inspired by the fact that all these young ones were going out in the community and asking questions and then coming back the next day and then starting to write their stories. So they'd write their story about Nan and Pop or about their culture, or there was one young girl from, I think she was in grade 5 or 6, her story started off with, I was absolutely rapt the first time I found out that I was Aboriginal, and now I'm proud to, you know, write my story. And then she went off and wrote this big story about the history that she'd gone out and found out for herself.
How good is that?
They're learning stuff, you know, they're learning stuff. And so I thought, I didn't realise before I started this, I thought this is going to be like an IT project and, you know, we'll teach the kids how to write stories using the iPad. And then as time went by, I thought, oh, this is just a great way to get these kids to learn about their cultural heritage and their mob and their, you know, they talk to their elders, which is always important. And once I realised that, and then David, I think David knew this already. It was really funny. So we actually worked together as a really good team to encourage these kids to talk about this sort of stuff. It was fantastic what they came out with.
Right,
yeah. We've now produced a whole storybook that's about 25 pages of selected students' stories. Obviously, some of the better ones, yeah. And many and varied. Some are talking about sports people. Some are talking about, you know, their elders or the community or about their mob that they, you know, never talked about before. So
yeah, that's great. Where do you go to with those 25 pages now? What do you do?
Well, the idea of producing this booklet was as time went by, we thought we're producing all these great stories. All these students are writing all these great stories. We have to do something with them. So that's when David and I decided we need to put them into a storybook. They were in a digital format on an iPad app called Book Creator. Before I chose that, I actually did a lot of research on, there's many, many apps out there that are great for writing stories. And I think Book Creator is probably one of the better ones because it's very versatile. You can insert you know, images and video. It's really easy for the students to use. They could write the story. It's fully electronic, and they can actually record the story and put that audio on each individual page as well. So I found it to be, you know, great vehicle for writing these stories. But then eventually we thought, well, in electronic format, that's not going to be able to reach a lot of people. So we decided to publish a book.
Do
a hard copy. Mm-hmm. We rejigged everything. We had the kids had a lot of fun going to different websites and lifting slabs of information off websites. This was just internal, just for what we were working on. So it wasn't sort of really breaking any sort of copyright rules or anything. They were, you know, copying pictures of the flag and pictures of, you know, of leaders, community leaders that they learnt about, and wrote stories about them and had all these images in there. So obviously that became a bit of an issue after a while. We sought legal advice and we had to remove all that stuff. So we've just got a lot of lovely background photos now and all the students' stories in the booklet.
So there's quite a diverse range of skills and knowledge picked up here. You've just touched on copyright law.
That's right.
So these young ones have learnt what they can take, what they can't take. They've learnt about copyright law just by way of doing research and making up their own stories.
Yeah, well, at the time we encouraged them to just go and do some research, go to websites, and I'd actually, because like I'm right into technology now, so I gave every single iPad in the room access to the internet via my own network, my own wireless network as well. Didn't need to have anything else in place. Yeah. I had the whole thing, yeah. And then I had another network set up for the teachers, and I could actually disconnect the students by just pulling out a cable.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not focusing, disconnecting from the internet. But while they were connected, they were going out and they were spending a lot of time researching. We did actually talk about that and say, and we did teach them about copyright stuff as well. And I think they're probably going to expect to see a little bit of that stuff in there, but we're going to have to talk a little bit more about copyright by the time the booklet comes out.
Mm. This sort of project, James, it has some practical outcomes in regards to closing the gap. I mean, I don't know, I'm a little bit over this closing the gap. And by the way, this Thursday is National Close the Gap Day. And I'm just a little bit over it because there's millions, tens of millions, billions of dollars spent. And I don't know, we see sort of some little outcomes along the way. But this one, it's some real, real tangible outcomes here where these young kids have really learned something, have acquired some knowledge and expertise and stuff like that. It just sounds so good.
Well, I can speak honestly about that where, you know, they'd write their story and we'd actually spend time with them helping them to, you know, learn. And it was actually noted by the teachers that their literacy had improved. The project was researched by Victoria University as well to determine their level of improvement in their literacy. We also made sure that every single school who was involved in it had the on-demand testing system, which is quite versatile and used quite extensively throughout education, right throughout Australia, primarily with government schools. But we were able to gauge, we had all the students sit on-demand test for literacy and numeracy before the project started. And also we've done it since they finished, and we've noticed improvements primarily in their literacy, obviously, because we're focusing on the digital stories.
Mm.
So it has actually made a difference. Another difference that I found it made, that, you know, I was thinking about a primary school in Echuca where the principal, I spoke to him one day about these siblings that were in grade 5 and 6, and, you know, they'd hardly show up at school at all. But on the TECP Spark session days, they'd be at school at 8 o'clock in the morning saying, you know, where's the bus? I want to go to the TECP. You know, because they absolutely loved it, because they were learning stuff in a fun way,
yes,
in a safe environment,
yes,
where, you know, there was just everyone from their local mob was in the training session with them.
Okay.
And I don't think there was, you know, one white fella there, you know. I think they were all, the trainers were all First Nations people.
All First Nations people too.
Yeah. Except for David, but he's actually from Sri Lankan, so he's mm-hmm. dark skinned. He's quite knowledgeable about Australian, you know, Aboriginal history, and so he fitted in quite well. But
these kids
felt comfortable.
It's great. I had a similar experience in Cape York communities where we were teaching radio. There was me and a crew, trainers, and a few people going out. We're doing radio training with school based traineeships, and these were older kids. These are kids in year 9 and 10 and 11, and some of those schools like Araku and Kawanyama, those kids were at school every time they knew that our team was in town, they were at school. But sometime the comment was, Tiger, we haven't seen these couple of fellas here since you were here last. So it just goes to show that they will apply themselves where there's something that they love and can see some purpose or some use in it. These students you're working with, what age group, what years class?
In primary school, five sixes, and also sevens and eights.
Okay.
But we made a bit of a special situation for Warrior College down at Healesville, because we had school is for girls between the ages from years 7 to 10. So we invited those older students to come along and be involved, which was great. And that was a fantastic experience, because we get the local young ones who didn't really have much interaction with community or with other Aboriginal people. So there was a lot of girls from remote communities up in the Northern Territory. So they were, you know, Walpuri, that sort of area.
Mm.
So it was really nice. You know, they all spoke their language. They all lived fairly traditionally, but then they'd come down to the school, and they'd, you know, they'd obviously, the idea was to learn a bit more about how to, you know, get a good education and work within this, you know, white society framework that we've got to work in.
Yeah.
But it was really great for the kids from the local Hillsville community that had never met, you know, people who lived in a traditional way. So it was great for them to interact with each other, sit down and tell stories together and work together all day. And they really enjoyed it. You know, and the older ones, they were really shy, but they opened up as well and, you know, started telling stories and started writing songs as well, you know. So all around it was pretty good. Plus we got, we had in, there's another college in Ballarat where there were older students involved as well, because we really wanted to make sure that we had some of the kids from the remote communities involved as well, if they're from the local area, because we thought that was important, you know, to not just focus on the kids that are, you know, growing up in urban areas.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep, yes. Mm. Now, in some of those mainstream schools, were they okay with it when they were approached to say we're only focusing on First Nations students and those that are a bit behind or those that aren't going so well? How did the teachers take that, these white fellas?
Well, that was pretty much what we said to them. You know, the First Nations kids, and they may not be doing so well. We've got this special project that we're going to run using iPads and technology to try and, you know, a different tilt on trying to get them to respond. I think some of them kind of looked at us sideways as if to say we're a bit weird, but, you know, had no objection from anybody. They're all happy to give it a bit of a go. But then I found a lot of them didn't really know anything. You know, these kids, these First Nations students were just students in their class. And they'd never really, sure, they may have known that they were First Nations, you know, kids, but they'd never really sort of done anything about it. But what I made sure that we did at the beginning of the project, before we started training the students, we trained the teachers as well.
Okay.
I actually got iPads into all the schools, into the hands of all the teachers that were identified. We actually sought out teachers that were had the students in their classes, had some sort of interest in possibly learning a little bit more about Aboriginal Australia, in inverted commas. And so they were selected by the principal, generally. And so I organised for those teachers to have iPad training. So we taught them all about the technology and how it worked, because at that stage, you know, this was 18 months ago, sure, they'd been around for a while, but not everyone had even touched one.
That's right.
So we made sure that they knew how to use them for a start. And so I actually organised our supplier to provide a one-day training session for every teacher in all three areas. And then I think it was about a month later, David actually arranged for a three-day workshop for all of the teachers to come into Melbourne. So we had probably around about 25 or 30 teachers that were involved or were going to be involved, or we had two teachers from a particular school. And they got training in, how would you describe it? You know, they probably didn't know anything about Aboriginal people or Aboriginal Australia or anything. So we made sure that they got the training that they required. We invited Archie to come along, and we explained to them that this is all about digital storytelling or storytelling. Okay, we have a preeminent storyteller in Australia. His name's Archie Rage. So we invited him to come along and talk about, you know, everyone knows and loves Archie's songs, but you probably haven't heard him talk about how they came about. So he talked about Uncle Banjo, and he explained to them where this story began. So it was covering off the cultural aspect, his mob, his community aspect, a lot of stuff that people didn't understand about how Aboriginal Australia or how Aboriginal people work, you know, understood each other, worked together, and that were different from your mob. And so
it was important that those teachers to understand this first up.
Absolutely.
In order to undertake to undertake the project, yeah.
Exactly. And so we had Archie actually put on a mini concert with them. And I was happily standing down the back, standing next to Lou Bennett, because she was coming in the next day to do something similar, Lou Bennett from Titus. And we were sort of ribbing each other, going, laughing. And all the Currys or Murrays in the room were just, you know, great story. Having a ball, just listening to these stories, because we all knew it. We all understood.
Yes.
But then, you know, the reaction of some of these teachers, I actually had one teacher who was crying.
Really?
She was so overwhelmed with what she'd learned, especially on the third day, because we had Lou come in the next day, and she did a similar thing to what Archie did. Talked about how Titus wrote the digital stories, and then how they produced songs and turned them into songs. So these people got an understanding of, you know, how to write the story, but also where we were coming from as a people as well. And we're not, you know, so we fit in with your white society, but we're not really like you. We have our own way of operating. And they really, it was a fantastic opportunity for them to learn about that.
So, James, then, yeah, go on, sorry, go on.
Sorry, I've got to tell you about the third day.
Yes.
Because the third day was the one that really smacked him in the face, because it was Gary Foley.
Oh, my God. He's great, the old Foley, yeah.
Yeah, and so he basically just, you know, he'd basically told it as it was. We know what he's like.
As he does, yeah.
But I think
and
he's
does it so eloquently, he can articulate it so well.
Yeah, he's
and it's
he's
Dr.
Very good.
Foley now, isn't it, or Professor Foley or
oh,
something
yeah.
or other?
Yeah, he recently just did his PhD, so
yeah.
he's Dr.
Foley. Oh, my God.
Isn't that funny? But, you know, he'd actually mellowed a bit from, like, I grew up hearing Foley the way he has been his whole life, and he's mellowed a bit, and he really, I think he got right into the psyche of these people and had them understand things that they just, and then by the third day I had a few others crying too.
Yeah, right.
It was just such an impact.
Yeah.
But I think it was really important for these teachers to know where we're coming from, to be able to do a good job.
Now, what you did in those 3 days, that needs to be done right across the country with every teacher in the schooling system, really.
Yes, definitely.
They need to understand. Whether they've got First Nations students or not, they need to understand what the situation is with First Nations people and colonisation and the impacts of colonisation.
Yeah, of course, you know. Foley talked about all of that stuff, and they just learnt stuff they never knew. And I was thinking exactly the same thing while I was standing there, really, and just enjoying the whole thing. This needs to go to the rest of, you know, every yep. single teacher right throughout Australia.
Every
I'd love
teacher.
To be have here today.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a shame we can't do that. But
mate, that's fantastic. What a way of doing it. Listen, let's take a break for a song. It's a song by Bob McLeod. It's called Friendship Road. We'll come back and talk about, I suppose, the wrapping up, the assessing, the evaluation, the outcomes, and we haven't asked how many students. So when we come back, we'll ask you how many students have been involved and then the assessment and evaluation of it all. Back with you soon, James. My guest is James Williams. He is the project manager he's the ICT project manager of a project called Technology Enriched Curriculum Project, working with iPads and First Nations students. And this is all done within the Closing the Gap framework. And it's a project managed by the Catholic Education Commission Victoria. And James is a First Nations man from up around my country way there. So he's a Waka Waka man. And James, how many students do you have in this project overall?
173.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's actually throughout the three areas, there were 15 schools altogether. They were, you know, like, for example, in Echuca, there were four primary schools, St. Joseph's Catholic College, which we had probably about 28 students from there, and plus Echuca Secondary College as well. We had about four or five students from there. We found that college to be a bit of a challenge. I've actually spent a bit of extra time there with the students, going to the college outside of the Spark sessions to work with the career education support officers there to try and encourage these kids along a bit. We found that one, they were a bit of a tough nut to crack, that one.
I'm sure, yes.
It was good. It was good because, you know, they were keen. The kids were keen. Yeah. It was an important thing.
And what do you think has been achieved here? The outcomes for you?
Well, from a personal perspective, as I said before, this started off as an IT project, one of many IT projects I've worked on throughout my whole life, but I knew there was going to be a twist to it because it was working with my people, you know, or the young ones. And then as time went by, you know, it opened my eyes as to the potential we had for these young ones to learn a lot, but then also for us to educate other people. And then with the finished products that we're going to have, we don't have permission to actually get them out into the public domain, but they'll be given to all of the students and all the families and all the schools that were involved, and the schools can use them with their discretion in the schooling, in the curriculum. So we've got the digital storybook that's been produced, and we can share that with all the other students in the school. Plus, we've got an album of of 15 songs and one poem that I'm just getting mastered at the moment. So that'll be completed well around about now as well. So I must send you a copy. I don't know if you can play it just yet, but I've actually spoken to the people who came along and assisted with the songwriting workshops, like Emma Donovan, Darlene Briscoe, Lou Bennett came along, James Henry, and a number of other local Indigenous artists, like Lee Morgan, for example.
Man, that's a great project.
Oh, it was fantastic to get this really, really talented local, you know, mob come along and help the students. You know, same sort of deal. We'd start off with a bit of a theme about, okay, what do you want to write this song about? And then the songwriting workshops, the people, you know, the lead trainer would encourage the kids to. And the lead trainer didn't do the job. The students all came up with the lyrics for all the songs. You know, I was there in every session,
right.
Because if the lead trainer needed a bit of a help, I'd whip out my guitar and play along. That was really a bonus, you know, me being able to play.
I reckon you've been a muso as well as a bloody IT bloke. Yeah, yeah.
I'd take some kids aside who were sort of struggling, and I want to go and write my own song. So we had this one little one in grade six from Ballarat. Had a beautiful voice, couldn't really like nail it to sing on key, but I spent a little bit of time with her, and then I got the engineer to do a bit of magic with her song that she wrote, and I think it's just amazing. I can't wait for you to actually hear some of these songs. You're going to love them. It just really amazing what came out in the songwriting workshops, and then, you know, the lead trainer would give them an idea of how do we want this song to go. Look, I'll never forget Lou actually helping the kids writing a reggae-type song down at Hillsville. You know, how do you like this beat? How do you like this chords? And they went, no, we don't like that. Do something different. So, yeah, then we'd eventually come up, and then it was just then turned into a typical songwriting workshop. And, oh, some of the songs, you're going to be blown away by how good they are. Some of them are just like typical kids sounding like they're having a bit of fun, but some of them are just amazing.
All right, mate. But what about the evaluation and stuff? What do you got to do there now?
Well, as I said before, the whole project was researched by Victoria University, so they conducted meetings with parents to talk about what the parents thought about the difference it's been making to their children. And also they conducted separate workshops to try and gauge, through research methodologies, the improvements that the students had made. So that's all been well documented and part of our report that we're sending back to the appropriate government departments we have to report back to. So, they've been showing good results as far as reporting goes.
Yep, it has to show good results. Well, mate, look, it's been great having you join us today. It's a great project, and let's hope you can get it up and running or get an extension to it. But especially the cultural awareness across those teachers and stuff in those schools, and then those young fellas with iPads and that, man, that's magic. Thanks for joining us and telling your story, man. Fantastic. Congratulations on it. What a great project.
Thanks very much, Tiger. It's a pleasure to be able to share what I've been doing with the rest of Australia, and I hope you've all really enjoyed hearing what we're talking about.
Surely you have, man. It's great. Inspirational work it is. Nothing shorter than inspirational work. Good on you, mate. Thanks, good one, Tiger. Right, buddy.
Okay, then. Bye-bye.
Bye now. James Williams there. What a great project. That's amazing. And I'd like to send out a cheerio call to Bumabipra Media in Cairns, Goomala Mob, Goomala Network up there, out in remote communities. And, well, the Territory Mob, I think, Goomala. Or Goomala, it might be WA. I don't know where this country, too big for me, I just don't know where people are. But the Goomala Network, in this great country of ours, Victoria Daily Shire, there's a number of communities and that are taking Let's Talk. So it's good day to all you, Mob. It's great to have you tune in and listen to these sorts of stories. I mean, it's just fantastic, isn't it? It's getting close to news time. Now, don't forget this Tracker magazine. You've got to get Tracker. It came out, I think, this month's edition came out about fortnight ago. You've got to get Tracker. You walk into your news agents and tell them you want that Blackfella magazine. It's called Tracker, T-R-A-C-K-E-R. T-R-A-C-K-E-R. And tell them to get it in for you. You'd like to read it. Time for me to go. Have a great day. I'm back tomorrow with Professor John Altman talking about a range of things. You just have a good day.